This is a personal essay, personal for me. But if its message was unique to me, I doubt it would be of interest to anyone else. While, of course, our individual histories differ, some of the conclusions I've reached may resonate with you. No one's life is identical to mine. My expertise on life is limited to that one life I know best. And my hope is that some of these events may trigger a responsive chord within your own experience. Recognize, though, that those life experiences often raise painful memories for many of us, including myself. But to ignore past injustices is to invite them to recur. And sadly, many of these injustices have never really gone away. I don't believe that most people are haters or bigots, but indifference and insensitivity can serve to aid and abet those few who are. I'm told that the most privileged people in this country are white male Christians. I possess two of those three traits. Maybe not having the third helped enable me to come to some of the conclusions I will speak to today. I was raised in a cultural but non-observant Jewish family. Our neighborhood was lower middle class, mixed with many first-generation Germans, Irish, Italian, and Polish. Racial and religious stereotypes were a part of my growing up in this atmosphere. But never did I ever get quite used to them, or to the pain that they can inflict. Whether intentional or not, there is pain. I refuse to believe that those slurs, stereotypes, and insults were always intended to cause pain, but they did. Perhaps that sense of hurt I felt as a young boy helped sensitize me to the pain of others. I'd like to think that a feeling of empathy in me would have occurred on its own, but we are all products of our own experience, so honestly, I can't be sure. It was World War II, and I was about 10 years old, when I was called to the principal's office for some minor behavioral infraction. The principal himself was a huge man with penetrating eyes and a proud son of German immigrants himself. He had lost a son fighting for the Americans during the war. His words have stayed with me since that day. My son died in the war for your people. Even at that age, I understood what your people meant. Anti-Semitism was rife in my community. The remark was followed by a sharp slap to my face. The sting of that slap went away in a few minutes. The verbal assault was permanent. I recall being at a Boy Scout camp when a bugle rang out on a Friday night. Our scoutmaster identified the sounds as a call to Jew Mass. He and some of my fellow scouts laughed, and he then taught the troop a mean and mocking anti-Semitic song. The overt slurs were painful, but the more subtle ones hurt more. Were all who joined in bigots? No. They were simply buying into the culture of the times, stereotyping, masquerading as truth. Bigoted or just unaware, it hurt, and probably my sensibilities were raised because of these events. They've influenced me throughout all my years. I could go on endlessly recalling negative childhood and later teenage events. They are unforgettable to me. There was a time when I bought into it and thought of myself unworthy because of my heritage. The term self-loathing has meaning for me. I even found my own way of sheltering my feelings by denying my background. And I know how that feels. And it makes me, I hope, more aware of how others deal with this type of pain. I was an early teenager and an avid baseball fan when, in 1947, the Brooklyn Dodgers brought up the first black Major League Baseball player, Jackie Robinson. There were those who applauded the decision and others who railed against this incursion into the white man's game. The shock, though, was the fact that it had never even occurred to me that there were no black players in Major League Baseball. The so-called norm of that time simply dictated that, like many things, the unwritten rules of baseball had passed beneath my radar. I simply had never noticed. Originally, when writing this essay, I labeled these epiphanies as clueless moments. Actually, the clues were there, but like many, I didn't recognize them. Perhaps awareness deficit is a more appropriate phrase. And like the inept Inspector Clouseau, I often ignored the most obvious clues. I was not consciously biased, but an unaware accomplice to the conventional mores of the times. And that broken racial barrier in baseball would become a major part of my education. A sense of justice had been stimulated. I was maybe becoming a little more cognizant of the world outside my immediate surroundings. In my segregated northern New Jersey town, there was only one high school. There were no blacks in it, and there was only one openly gay boy. I was always uncomfortable with the merciless tauntings he received. And while I never joined in, neither did I ever voice objections. I could sense some of his pain, but did nothing to ease it. Later, I realized that his seeming acceptance of this bullying was similar to my reaction to anti-Semitism. I sensed his hurt and shame at being what he was, just as I had. That realization was part of my education. The prevalent ideas of right and wrong of the times were beginning to add up, and they were being added up as very ugly. Later, one of my friends confided to me that he was gay, although the words used at that time were coarse and demeaning. Rather than just tell me, it was as if he was confessing some shameful sin to me. His painful revelation did not alter our friendship. We had far more in common than that one aspect of life. A lesson learned, a bit of sensitivity gained, maybe a clue. And as I have made more and more contact with others with sexual orientations different than my own, I realize how much inadvertent pain I may have inflicted. Not through hostility, but rather a complete lack of awareness of what their day-to-day struggles were. That, too, is a learning experience, and the clues are there. One just had to look. A few years later, when I was serving as a Navy medic with a Marine battalion in North Carolina, we had one black dental technician serving in the same capacity as I. Emmanuel Hickson was from the town next to mine in New Jersey. And partly because of that, we had some common ground and became buddies. Hickson was a talented artist and became my companion on fishing expeditions in the nearby waterway. I fished, or as Hicks used to say, Bob's drowning worms again, while he sketched the local lush southern swamp sites in charcoal. One day on a cleaning detail in the barracks, an NCO from Mississippi addressed Hickson. "Boy, you need to make that broom move faster." That day I learned that the term boy had an entirely different connotation to Hickson than it did to me. The term had been used not to signify age, my thought, but Hickson recognized it for what it was. A vicious and historically charged racial put-down. As my furious friend moved menacingly towards his tormentor, I had all I could do to restrain him, and I probably kept him out of the brig that day. Later, he explained how hurtful the use of that word was to him. He grew up knowing what it meant. I got it, but someone had to teach me. It never occurred to me before. The moment I realized this, I became just a trifle more aware of the ideas and injustices of the time and place where I grew up. And it had never occurred to me that women could be medical doctors, let alone surgeons. Would they faint at the sight of blood? I didn't know why, just that men were doctors and women were nurses. Years later, a skillful eye surgeon performed cataract procedures on both my eyes. My vision was improved through her, yes, her, skills with a knife. But the real eye-opener was the fact that the existing years between my naive and culturally fostered assumption about women, and especially women doctors, were idiotic concepts fostered by the culture I lived in. The simple truth is that the ability is gender neutral, and it has allowed me to accept that as a basic matter of fact. It didn't happen to me all at once, but perhaps through osmosis coupled with reality, I had learned a lot about capability, and in retrospect, wonder why I even needed that proof. Today, I'm treated for some of my medical issues by a Chinese-educated female physician who is proficient in both Eastern and Western medicine. Her combination of acupuncture and Western modes enables me to control chronic pain. So without my eye surgeon, Dr. Mary Ann Lloyd, and my pain doctor, Dr. Shirley Wu, I might very well be half blind and in a wheelchair. I was rescued by a general, though painfully slow and reluctant evolution of society's grip on reality. Growing up during World War II and listening to the propaganda and especially the racial aspects, it was easy to stereotype Asians, especially then current enemies, the Japanese. Vicious, non-creative fanatics. I find it an irony how the years have erased those old erroneous stereotypes with other just as erroneous new stereotypes. And even though the idea that all Asians are brilliant students, innovative and intellectually and morally superior might be considered a positive stereotype, it is still a stereotype and equally as foolish. I think the lesson here is to beware of using the word all in describing any group. Anyone who tells you that Jews are inherently good at business definitely did not grow up in my lower middle class neighborhood. And certainly not with my family. Part of my education was gleaned from not always having enough to eat or money to pay the rent. And that good at business generalization was as harmful as any other, even when meant as a positive. A stereotype is still a stereotype. When I went to work at a large international insurance conglomerate in New York, I was a little unnerved that I would, among other things, be the home office supervisor dealing with the company's German affiliate. Having spent some of my formative years during the war, I had my own misgivings about dealing with the tall, steely-eyed, blonde Aryan stormtrooper that was implanted in my mind by the news media during the World War II era. As I settled into my new job, most of my dealings were via the written word. I would rarely have the need for telephone conversations with my counterparts in Germany. My mental image of cold-hearted Nordics was a tough one for which to let go. Images of sadistic brutes shoving people into ovens were hard to erase. Then my main correspondent, Dietmann Hannes of Frankfurt, Germany, came to visit the New York office. Herr Hannes was a balding, myopic, frail man. His little remaining hair was dark, and his eyeglasses were the proverbial bottoms of Coke bottles. He was more interested in Mozart and Beethoven than in revisiting the deeds of Hitler and the Nazis, including, he confessed, those of some of his own immediate family. Dietmann Hannes had his own struggles with awareness and history. I spent most of the next week showing him around New York and having him as a guest in my home. Strangely, though, this artistic man who lived on Beethovenstrasse in Frankfurt did not share my enthusiasm for a banjo rendition of Ode to Joy. Bob, please turn it off. I can only chalk that up to cultural snobbery. Well, nobody's perfect. Our time together made our future correspondence much different. We had bonded and remained on a friendly basis until I left the company. This gentle soul from Germany formed a particular part of my education, which had lots of recent history to overcome and a lot of media propaganda to overcome. One stereotype gone, one less negative one to deal with. Even without malice, it's easy to be taken in by what passes as the common culture at the end of in the era in which we live. Asians, Africans, Latinos, all have been sorted out and placed in the confinement of those little boxes in our brains. And many of us aren't even aware of it. We inflict the pain just as do the overtly bigoted. Worse, we don't know it. Inadvertent non-awareness can be just as harmful as bigotry and hate. I think many of us have experienced I never thought of that forehead slap in our lives. Some of us, and I certainly include myself, have often lived in that state of, sorry, cluelessness. Things are going on, and we have, whether intentionally or not, simply not seen or felt them. I don't think we're a mean or uncaring people, but we can be victims of our own unawareness. Often we are oblivious to the struggles of those lives around us. We just need to understand that our personal experiences are unique and are constantly shaping our character. And if we expect others to empathize with us, with our struggles, shouldn't we make the effort to empathize with theirs? I recently read a book called Children of Dust by Ali Eteraz. Ali's picture, among others, is on the cover of today's Order of Service. Ali's a young man who has lived in several countries and now resides in the Bay Area. His journey as a Muslim from a hovel in Pakistan to successful author gave me a valuable insight into another culture. He has led the Hayward Library Writers Group, and he is on the Order of Service. His faith is the one currently being vilified by its use by a minority of fanatics and strongly abetted by our news media. His book has made a priceless contribution to my education. And having spent some time with him, we have learned to celebrate our common shared humanity. Radio, TV, newspapers, politician, and some clergy, efforts to deny him his humanity notwithstanding. So thank you to those who help wipe away the smog of indifference. Thanks, Jackie Robinson. Thanks, Emmanuel Hickson. Thanks to Dr. Shirley Wu and Dr. Mary Ann Lloyd. And thanks to Dietmann Hannes of Frankfurt, and recently to Ali Eteraz. And yes, Even thank you to that grammar school principal and to that Boy Scout leader and that bigoted NCO in the barracks in North Carolina, all of whose hate seemed endless, and to others who have contributed initially to my pain, but ultimately to my empathy. Others have and will continue to foster this clueless boy's education, some willingly and gently, others not so much. All in different ways, but each raising awareness. And I pray that education will never end as long as I can draw a breath. I'm unaware of what demonic misconceptions still thrive within me. It is certain that they exist. I hope I'm wise enough to recognize them. And at the same time, I reject the notion that in order to prove my adherence to the spirit of inclusion, I must automatically adopt every thought, precept, whim, individual, real, or imagined tenet expressed. I too am human and deserve acceptance. Not discriminating against groups does not mean accepting or justifying concepts which attack my own freedom to evaluate. Some of this has been very painful for me. And there are those who believe it unwise and uncomfortable to relive the past. But doing so has its purpose. In the words of Spanish philosopher George Santayana, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. This journey of personal evolution I have shared today is honestly unworthy of accolades. No humanitarian awards will or should ever come my way. We all, every one of us, are exposed to information and misinformation on a daily basis. Sifting through the noise and evaluating it is my own reward. The knowledge that in the midst of my own moral and spiritual evolution, my journey is self-charted. And often, it seems to be a meandering path, because it shifts from time to time. But nevertheless, it is my own path, and it is the correct path for me. On it will be many more self-inflicted slaps to my forehead with the accompanying, "Oh, how could I have not known that?" Finally, I don't believe the world is comprised of bigoted majority. It's easy to remain silent, though. And that silence gives unmerited power to those purveyors of hate. It acts as a multiplier to their malignant influence. My conscience decrees I cannot be silent. I close now with the words of psychotherapist Nathaniel Brandon. The first step toward change is awareness. The second step is acceptance. Thank you.